In your article, when you're describing urban planning, you used a term called abysogenic. So what does that actually mean?
Yeah, well, it's a sort of a bit of a jargony word, and us academics are a bit guilty of that sometimes. But I guess really what it means essentially is that many of our environments today, where we live, where we work, and how we travel, encourage us to be very sedentary. So people are often in cars for many hours of the day. They travel, they have long commutes from home to work, and then when they get to work, they're sitting at a desk, so they're not moving much. So our environments are making us fat because they're keeping us inactive, and they also often make it hard for us to get access to healthy food. Sometimes, you know, we're tired after a long commute, and we don't necessarily then go and get the freshest, the healthiest foods and spend time preparing them. But I guess it's really about the sedentary nature of our lives and the way that environments support and encourage that.
I'd never really thought about this until I was kind of researching this interview, but is there a historical link or precedent for kind of urban planners considering the health of the residents? How far back does that relationship go?
Well, that's a great question, Matt, because it actually goes back right to the origins of urban planning.
Okay.
And when you look at where urban planning first started, it was actually about concerns for people's health.
Yeah.
But very different to the concerns that we have for people's health today, it was concerns about what we call infectious communicable diseases. So things that we caught from each other. And a lot of this was because we lived in slum-like dwellings. We lived very, very close together. We also lived close to polluting factories, waste wasn't dealt with nearly as well as it is dealt with today. So urban planning emerged not only out of that, but largely out of those concerns for people's health. And today we've come sort of full circle because we're now, as urban planners, very concerned about people's health, but it's not so much about communicable diseases, things that we catch from each other. It's from these things called chronic diseases or non-communicable diseases. And these are the diseases that are really largely associated with the way we live.
Of which obesity is an example.
Yeah, obesity is an example. And sometimes I don't like personally to focus a lot on obesity, but I think when we start to think about how often we don't do nearly enough physical activity, or some people call it exercise, but we don't move enough, and our bodies are designed to move. And anyone who tries to do, say, 10,000 steps a day, often that's touted as the magic number of how many steps we should do it just as a minimum, you find it's quite hard to fit that amount of steps in a day, particularly if you drive to work. But once you start to walk a little bit more for recreation, maybe you might catch public transport, so you're walking from where you live to catch the train or the tram or the bus, then you walk when you get to your destination to get to your place of work or school or uni or whatever it is you're going to, then you start to actually get in those steps, and it's relatively easy then to just make activity, being more active, as part of what you do day by day. And then of course we know the more active we are, then we use up more energy, and it helps to keep our weight in check.
In modern Australia, how closely are urban planners and health organisations working sort of right now in 2017?
Well, you'd be amazed. We're working very closely together, and I've been an urban planner for quite a few years, and I have to say, when I first started my career, if somebody had said to me I'd be working closely with health professionals, I would have laughed at them.
Okay.
The other day, I gave a lecture to medical students. I work regularly with people from the Heart Foundation. I also work with people from the New South Wales Ministry of Health and health professionals in local health districts. And a lot of these organisations are also reaching out to urban planners. They're preparing guidelines specifically for urban planners, but also for health professionals to assist urban planners to make to plan, to design, to manage environments that help to support people being healthy. And this is particularly around getting people to be active as part of everyday life. But it's not just about that, and I can talk some more, if you like, about other ways that the environment can help to keep us healthy.
So those ties have been really strengthened over the past few decades, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was very important. There was a movement as part of the World Health Organization, which many listeners would have heard of. And there was a thing, and still is, called the Healthy Cities Movement. And that's a global movement, and that really is about, well, how can we make our cities more supportive of people's health? And the WHO, that's the World Health Cities organization, that's been going for many decades. But in 1986, there was a charter, the Ottawa Charter, and that really, I suppose, sort of cemented the idea that built environments, the places where we live and work and the places in between as we travel around, all those environments are important for our health, and we have to be careful how we plan them and how we develop them so that we don't build in unwittingly places that are going to make us, you know, or make it hard for us to keep healthy.
Well, from 1986 to now, your article touches on the idea that we've had a pretty rapid increase in the amount of data that we have access to. I was actually looking at a link to the diabetes map that you had in the article. That's really incredible. I thought it kind of gives you a colour code for Australia, and you can sort of zoom in on Sydney and it shows the different suburbs with the, I think, percentage of people having diabetes in that area. So how has this, I guess you'd say, increased access to health data, how has it sort of shown us about spatial patterning of health issues or improved our understanding of that?
Well, I think this sort of data, first of all, alerts us to areas where there are clearly some problems with people's health, and then it enables us to start asking questions. Well, is there something particular in that environment that is causing this spike or high incidence of a particular disease? And how can we grapple with that? How can we deal with that? So, for example, I work with people out in Western Sydney looking at diabetes incidence in Western Sydney, which actually is much higher than in some other parts of Sydney. So the issues to do with people having to travel further to get to work, so they're commuting longer distances and maybe being not as active as, say, people living in areas where they have more opportunities to work near to where they live.
Mm.
So, you know, so that's an issue there. But then it's obviously it's broader than just planning issues in the built environment. There's issues to do with education, information dissemination, and helping people to understand the sorts of things that, you know, they can do to help their health. But if they don't live in a place that supports that, if where they live is or they feel that it's unsafe, they don't want to go outside to exercise, to be with others, if the local shop doesn't sell many fresh foods, or the variety is very poor, or the quality is not very good, then it's, you know, it's going to be harder to get access to the sorts of foods that are going to keep you healthy and help you to fight obesity, which is a major risk factor for diabetes.
If we're having access to a lot more of this kind of data now, geographic data, does that mean that we need urban planners to sort of maybe improve their skills to analyse this kind of new medical data that they're having access to?
Well, I think certainly, you know, here where I teach at the University of New South Wales, our planning students learn about a lot of this new data. They learn about how they can display it, they can display the data on maps, and that then starts to give them an understanding of where there's issues of equity, inequity, and then where programs need to be specifically targeted in terms of trying to address those problems that can be mapped and can be then more easily seen. The differences and the problem areas are much better displayed through this better data.
Well, it's good to hear that this kind of access to data could really be influenced and used by these sort of urban planners of the future. Susan, thanks so much for coming on and joining me today.
Thanks, Matt.
No problems. That was Dr. Susan Thompson. She is a professor of planning at UNSW, telling us about how, with better data access to geographical sort of medical data, urban planners can help ease health problems in the future. It is 12 minutes to 5. You're on 2SER. Let's jump back into the tunes now. This one's Cody Chestnut.
Come on, children. Come on, children. We're on the front line today. African peace of mind. African unity. African action. Africa's a future. African politics. African business. African economy. Africa's a future. Africa, the future. African projection. Make new connections. Change the perception. Africa, the future. Learning how. Come on, children. Come on, children. We on the front line today.
inir ganjir majir bi inir ganjir manyali inir ganjir majir bi amma ibi yakaka kayerse imalamu ya tamalfa afoye ku tolli
yes yada
afoye unde mursu
yes yada
afoye kambadungu
yes yada
yer yada yer binay madoru
yes yada
na 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 na
yes yada
yes yada yes yada yes yada
to Songhai Blues with Yossi Yada. That's some desert rock from Mali. Before that, we heard Cody Chestnut with Africa, the Future. We have about 3.5 minutes until it's 6 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon slash night. I'm almost going to sign out. It's been really nice hanging out with you for the last 2 hours. Thanks so much today to the producer, Joanna, for keeping things running nice and smoothly. We'll be back again next week. Do stay tuned to 2SER. We have The Wire coming up real soon. Before we get there, out of Melbourne, I'm going to play a track from Cooking on Three Burners. This one's called Real Life, Baby. Have a good Thursday night.
Something to share.